Now it's our pleasure to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Bill G. from San Diego.
My name is Bill Goodson, and I'm an alcoholic. Good job, Phil. Thank you for... I'm still stuck back on an accelerants and decelerants. And, let's see. Welcome to the people that are new. My sobriety date is October 30th, 2001. My sponsor's here, and I have a home group, Cedar Street Men's, Sunday morning. And thank you, Phil, for asking me to come out here. I made the mistake of being funny at a meeting, and Phil's been bugging me ever since. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm here because I don't want to drink today. And I know that if I don't do this, I will drink. And I got asked this morning at 9 a.m. to do this, so I haven't had much preparation time. I got all the way to, my name is Bill Goodson, and I'm an alcoholic. The rest is going to be a crap shoot, so try to hang in there with me. I'm from, I love speaker CDs. I'm a speaker CD junkie. And I love the ones that have a point, and they're hilarious. And I love the ones that the guys like Chris R. and Myers and Sandy B. who are fixing AA. But my favorite speakers are the ones who tell their story, the simple story. And with your permission, I'd just like to tell you my story. I'm never uncomfortable at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. My uncle is a pants pissing drunk. I'm a pants pissing drunk. Any other pants pissing drunks here? Yeah, good. I love you guys. I am a pants pissing drunk. And if you didn't piss your pants, that's called a blackout. My uncle's a pants pissing drunk. And when I was a little kid, I was 17 years old or thereabouts. And he would get so drunk that he would be sober again. And he'd start at 8 in the morning, and he lived with us for a while, and he would be sober again, and he'd piss his pants, and you'd be talking to him, and he'd be talking to you normally, just like we would talk normally, but his pants were pissed. And so when I go to meetings, you know, forgive me, but when I go to meetings, I picture you all sober again with your pants pissed. I just always have and always will, and it makes me real comfortable here. If you're like me, that's the deal. I'm from a dysfunctional family. The only reason they were dysfunctional is because they had me for a member. And that's a fact. My parents, I was born in a house that... we pumped our own water out of a well, and my dad worked his way up to, he sold his last hotel and retired, and it was a big hotel. And my two little sisters own businesses, plural. Their husbands own a business, but my little sisters both own businesses. And then there's me, the oldest brother, son, who was the pants pissing drunk. So it was really a tough time for them. My mom says that I had started drinking when I was 3 years old. The kerosene heater dripped into a Coke can, and she says it was three quarters full, and I drank the whole thing and had to have my stomach pumped. Now, I'm pretty sure a three-year-old can tell the difference between kerosene and Pepsi, but I drank the whole thing and had my stomach pumped. And when I was a kid, I remember Mrs. Lovejoy, third grade. She's writing on the chalkboard, and she stopped writing, and she circled the room, and she went to stand me up by my ear, and she scratched my head. And then I remember sitting in front of the principal's office, not knowing why I was in front of the principal's office, having no idea. And I failed that grade. I failed third grade. And in the fourth grade, they sent me to this place, and this girl put these things on my ears, and she said, "When you hear the beep, hold up the popsicle stick." And so I thought she took a break. I thought she went home. And I never heard a beep, and it turned out I was deaf. And that's why I didn't see Mrs. Lovejoy circle the room, and I didn't see her go to stand me up, and I didn't know why I was in front of the principal's office. And kind of, it's not the reason I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because my mom and dad got together, did the hokey pokey, and I got the gene, but this is part of my story. So in fifth grade, I had to sit up front of the whole class and because they thought I couldn't hear. Now I've had three surgeries on both ears and kind of pioneered the whole tube thing. But I hear perfectly now. So I tell you that because it's that experience of no one knew I was deaf. And my dad would knock me out of the high chair if I said, huh. So I really had to pay attention to what people were saying, what was going on in the room. And I believe to this day that's what saved my ass in Alcoholics Anonymous, by paying attention to who's doing what and who's successful here and who talks and who does. And I started drinking when I was 11. My parents had a gallon of wine on the porch, and I remember looking at it. And then I remember taking the top off and putting it back on, and nothing happened, no fireworks. And then I drank half of it, and I filled it back up with water. And then I drank the whole thing. Water and all. And no repercussions, no big deals. And by the time I was 14, I was drinking every night. Miller Genuine Draft. All my initial relations with girls were done under the influence of alcohol. I would literally do things with girls drunk and they would try to see me during the day, and I couldn't talk to them. I would literally run. 15-year-old kid. I was a pretty boy. You can't tell now, but I was a pretty boy. So everything I learned, I was drunk when I had my first girlfriends. I was drunk through my first wife. And by the time I was 17, I was drinking and doing accelerants. All day, every day. And if a minute went by and I wasn't drinking or doing an accelerant, it was a bad minute. It was a bad minute. It was a bad long minute. And I ran some businesses. I was pretty successful. I had a pool company in the 80s, and I built swimming pools. And it seemed to me that the more money I made, the better stuff I drank. You know what I mean? And so 1991, I had a big house, a five-bedroom house in San Marcos. I had my wife, our three children, her sister, her two children, my best friend and his rock band all living in my house. And I paid for everything from the diapers to the drugs. And I was the guy. And when I walked in the door, whatever music I was listening to, I think at the time it was Skid Row, they would play it. When I walked in the door, they would play the music that I was listening to. And I had a job making a lot of money at a company you've all heard of. It's on TV all the time, and I was their number one salesman. And I was drinking Jack Daniels out of the freezer. Jack Daniels out of the freezer. You don't know, that's how you drink Jack Daniels. That's how you do it. 3 days in the freezer. And then I was drinking Tanqueray Bloody Marys. That was my drink. Half a bottle of Tanqueray, half a bottle of Bloody Mary mix, and a whole bottle of hot sauce, and a half a shaker of pepper, and I was good. And it was called One Drink. That was one drink. I just had one. The job fired me, not because I was drunk on the job, because I had a really bad attitude. Something about drinking Jack out of the freezer every night and all the drugs. She left. She took the kids. The band left, and there I was with a big five-bedroom house all by myself. I loaded I lost everything. The car I had, motorhome, cars. So I had just me and my motorcycle, and so I moved into a little apartment with some guys, and I would unzip the tent, take all my clothes off and dive in the tent and zip it back up really quick, because they had shut the power off in this apartment and there was a million cockroaches. And I like to sleep in a bug-free environment. And everyone again had moved, and I had this little place on my little motorcycle, and I was doing accelerants, the good one, the big one. We don't talk about in AA, but it's accepted here, believe me. It's all over the big book. And And there was some canvas in the closet, and when I'm accelerating, I sew really good, and I sewed saddlebags for my motorcycle, and I loaded up my motorcycle, and I had my $300 from the my last unemployment check, and I had my bottle of Cuervo 1800 in the back of this one, and my bottle of Jack in this one, and I went east, and I had so much stuff loaded on my motorcycle that if I stopped and put it on the kickstand, it would fall over. And so every rest stop, I was giving stuff away, iced chests, and it was just nuts. And I got to Lake Charles, Louisiana. I don't know why I went to go there. I heard there was a disaster there, and I was in a rest stop, and I had a little bit of pot and my Jack, and I had $7 in my pocket. I didn't know what I was going to do, and a lady in two stalls down from me in the rest stop said that she was with the circus, Great American Circus, and that if I wanted a job, I could work there the next day. Yeah, and so I was really happy, and I joined the circus, and they give nicknames like Popcorn. Whatever you do, you get the nickname Popcorn, whatever you do, and my nickname was Motorcycle Maniac. And I rode around behind them, and we did a show a day. And we set this big tent up, and we took it down every single day like crazy people and drank in bars all over the city. And God held my hand the whole time because I quit that job, and I went across country. And I don't have time to tell you the whole story, but the 90s I spent couch surfing. I spent a little time with the Grateful Dead. I think I was with the Grateful Dead. I'm not certain. I was in the parking lot in Ohio, and the Grateful Dead were in that stadium, but I never got to see them. We took tanks of nitrous oxide there to rob them blind, and I don't remember much. I just remember wandering around my hometown for 2 weeks with a peanut butter jelly sandwich my brother gave me, and hanging out at the library. You know, homeless people love public libraries, and so. I ended up in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'll tell you what happened. What I was like was I was a terrified little kid. And I used to make little bombs in parochial school. The CO2 cartridge, fill it with black powder and Elmer's glue and match heads for a fuse, and I would carry them on me, little bombs, in parochial school with nuns. The only person I was going to blow up was me, but, man, it was bad. Thank God for alcohol. As soon as I started drinking, I'd stop trying to blow myself up. So I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, and they got a good shelter system there, and I had my first great idea, which was if I don't work, I won't have money, and if I don't have money, I don't drink, and if I don't drink, I don't do accelerants. And so I made a decision that I was going to live at the homeless shelter, and I was going to volunteer at Bank One Ballpark. At the time, the Arizona Diamondbacks had just begun, and the inaugural Bank One Ballpark was opening. And I was a volunteer there, and I decided that I was just going to volunteer and eat homeless food and just live in that shelter for the rest of my life to stay away from drugs and alcohol. And they had a cash register there, and they were looking for somebody to run it. And there's a bunch of us little kids, a bunch of little kids and me, 35 years old. And they said, we need somebody to run the cash register. And I remember going, not me, not me, not me. And they go, you. And so the first 50 went in my pocket, and the first 100 went in my pocket. And so I'm a good thief because I know to get somebody else to run the cash register. That way they can't blame it on me. In case you're going to steal, that's good information. And I'm walking out, and a buddy that had the same idea with me, the guy that I did drugs with, and we stole cases of inaugural pamphlets. They're $5 each, and they're $25 to a case. And so I stole a case of, and I walked out the door to sell them ahead of where they were selling them. And there was a cop on a horse, and I'm in my homeless clothes with these glasses that I have really, really bad eyes, really, really bad. And I found a pair of glasses in a thrift store. And they looked like the Peggy Hill kind of glasses. They were like women's, and they go down here, and it was just, and they were pink. And so the cop's on his horse, and I got this case and the pink glasses and the homeless ripped up clothes, and he's on his horse, and he's just looking at me. And as he got to me, I said, the only thing cooler than a cop on a motorcycle is a cop on a horse. And he just went like this, and I went and sold my, And that's the story of my life, getting out with my little wit and my little humor, getting out of places. And I sold all those cases and all those brochures and a couple cases more, and I had a pocket full of money so thick that I couldn't get my hand in there. And I got a motel room for 3 nights and bought some bottles of whatever. It didn't matter at the time. And a pile of accelerants that... it was big. So 3 days. 3 days later, I woke up in the motel room, calling for the nurse, because it looked like a hospital bed. And I went out of there, and it turns out, in retrospect, as I left the hotel room, I had shaved my entire body from head to toe, and I mean every hair on my freaking body was shaved, And I didn't do a good job. I looked like a sheared sheep. I was it was bad. And I used 3 homeless raiders, and I spent time in 3 hours in the shower. And I don't remember doing it. I just remember the after effects. And my nickname on the streets is Marco Polo, because I can find you whatever you want. And I went to the homeless shelters, and they wouldn't let me in. And I know the rules, and Marco Polo, I know that there's a bed open. I get it. And they weren't touching me. And I slept outdoors that night for the first time in a long time. And the next day I went to a church crying like a baby. Just sat there in the pews, and I just cried. Nothing like that had ever happened to me before. And they sent me to this recovery home, and they're reading how it works. And they were balk, balk, balking, and they were just all these things. And I thought, these people are whacked out of their mind. I was the only white guy there. And the week I laid in bed, and the first time they sent me out, I did more drugs and I did more drinking. And I went to 7 recovery homes. 6 after that one. I won't bore you with all the details, but I'll tell you that the second one I went to, the guy had me fill out a paper, said, how much drugs did you have? And I wrote lots, and he said, how much alcohol do you drink? And I wrote lots. And he looked at it, and he's looking at it, and he says, you can't write lots. You have to write what you drank and how much. And he looked up to me, and he said, lots will do. And lots will do. And he left me alone. I laid in that bed. And the third one, I was drunk. Volunteers of America or Salvation Army, I was drunk with my $4 I worked for that week for. Anybody Salvation Army? Worked 40 hours for $4, and I spent that on a 40-ounce of beer. And the next one I went to, VOA, they got me a job at the City College in charge of the security, in charge of the watches. Yeah, bad move. I went home every night with a watch in my underwear. It was really bad. I was drunk, and the day I left that place, I was drunk and on drugs and went to jail that night. My last great idea was up in Escondido at the detox, and I decided that I wasn't going to drink today, and it's always today. Thank you very much. I'm good. 66 days that worked. And the 67th day, I got in a fight with this black lady who runs the place, and she's tougher than I am. And I was out the door, and I was in a crack house that night. And I knew something was wrong when I was getting kicked out of crack houses for drinking too much. Apparently, when you're the only white guy in a crack house, a blackout's a real bad idea. So I'm outdoors. Crack houses won't touch me. Child support took all my paychecks. I'm living in Balboa Park. I'm trying to work day labor. My nickname on the streets is Terrorista. Terroristo is male. I had really long hair, so it was Terrorista. I looked like a terrorist, different levels of beard and long hair. That was my nickname. Things got so bad that Alcoholics Anonymous was, again, a good idea. I knew that this didn't work for me. I came here. I told these funny stories. I made friends, got a girlfriend, got a little job, got a little car, and every time I got drunk, so I knew AA didn't work for me. I went to this little place on 30th and Cedar. I checked in the detox, and it's a 3 to 5 day detox. And I was there for 38 days in their psych unit. Well, apparently, I was in remedial detox. I showed up with, I worked for circuses. I also worked for Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey and handled elephants. If you've never had 13 elephants at a trot in a giant circle and you're in charge of one of them and you can't figure out which one you're in charge of, that's my story. They had to get rid of me. They really had to get rid of me. And I make nooses. I can make a noose really fast, 13 knots, just perfectly. They taught me knots in circuses. So when I was homeless, I had nooses hanging everywhere. Every piece of rope or twine I found, I made a noose out of and hung it off of my homeless bag or whatever. And they left me out in front of detox for 2 weeks, and I slept on the cardboard. And the most painful time of my life to this day was the first week I found a bottle of vodka. I just found a bottle of vodka the first day I signed up there, and I drank that all week. And the second week I had no alcohol, no drugs. And I was just sleeping on cardboard, watching people's feet walk by, waiting for the time to go by. And they weren't touching me in that detox because they'd seen me before. I'd lived there before, and I was terrorista with the nooses. And I don't blame them for not touching me. The second week, watching the feet walk by was the most painful experience of my life. And they finally let me in, and something happened. I don't know what happened, but they have a closet there for clothes, like homeless clothes. And we called it Nordies. I don't know what they call it now, but we called it Nordies. And I would pull all the clothes out, fold them, and put them all back nice and stacked and take what I needed. And I would even pull the woman's clothes out, and I'd be folding bras and panties. And just something happened. And I went to people, and this is going to shock you, but I would ask them, what should I be doing right now? And they would say, mop the floor. And I'd say, okay, where's the mop? And they'd say, well, don't you want to sweep it first? And I would sweep it. And then one guy said, why don't you read the big book? And I had never done that. I had tried everything else. I read Dianetics three times with a medical dictionary this thick that you have to use four times a page. And it didn't work. I was a deacon with the church. I had a bottle in one hand and a Bible in the other. It didn't work out for me. Not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying it didn't work for me. And he said, read the big book. And I opened the big book just anywhere. And it said, full flight from reality. And it said, maladjusted to life. And it said, outright mental defective. And I thought, really? 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 And so I couldn't believe that it said that. Because, you know, two circuses, Grateful Dead, traveling around the United States on a motorcycle with handmade saddlebags, and I mean, I was nuts. I was in full flight from reality, and I checked into this little recovery home on 30th and Cedar, and I had the Daffy Duck slippers and the long hair, and I was the only guy there that came from a psych ward, so they didn't treat me well. Every time I ate, if I got up from my thing, they would put food on where I sat, and I was genuinely mistreated, and which is the story of my life. So it was nothing new. I'm used to it, and I was used to it at the point. And when they cut my hair, it looked like somebody ran over a cat. It really did. It was just bad. I don't have nice hair when it's long, and they told me to get a sponsor, and it was raining outside, and I didn't want to get a sponsor, but I asked this man to be my sponsor, and he asked me point blank if I was effed, and he didn't say it with the abbreviation. And I could look into his face and see that the right answer was yes. Like, I could see, he said, are you fucked? And I was like, I could see in his face that the right answer was yes, and I had never seen or heard of anything like that before in my life, and I said, yes. And he said, good. And then another guy asked me if I was retarded. I said, I'm not retarded. I come from a wealthy, self-made family, and I've done some things. He said, well, why don't you look it up in the dictionary? I looked it up. It was mentally or physically backward. 40 years old, 7th recovery home. I was retarded. Another guy asked me if I was homeless. I said, no, I live in this recovery home. He said, why don't you go to that guy at the desk right there, tell him to kiss your ass, come back here and tell me you ain't homeless. I was like, wow, I'm retarded and I'm homeless and I'm effed. And it just all hit me. My whole life hit me. And the first three steps were Charlie Brown's teacher, blah, 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 blah. And then I held hands with another man, which asking a man to be my sponsor is like asking a man to be my Valentine. It's not something I'm good at. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I sponsor men who have men for Valentines. It's okay. It's just not my story. And and he had me write my fourth step. And he had me write who I was mad. I couldn't do it. I didn't know what to do. And he said, well, who are you mad at the most? I said, my father. And he had me write it. And I said, he said, why? And I said, he never threw me a ball. He never told me he loved me. He never hugged me. And never took me to a baseball game. And then he said, what did it affect? And he had me write what it affected. Pride, security, self-esteem, personal relations, probably sex relations somehow, and ambitions, pocketbook. And then he said, where were you selfish? And I said, I wasn't selfish. I was a little kid. And he said, when did you start drinking? I said, 11 years old. He said, why don't you write drunken little prick since you were 11? And so 11 years old, I started drinking, and I stopped learning about life and just started learning about myself and drinking and everything I knew till I turned 40 in a canyon downtown on Florida, Florida Street, downtown San Diego. I learned drunk and on drugs, and so everything I knew about life was wrong, and I knew it. And when I wrote my fourth step, it seemed ludicrous. It seemed stupid. That part helped, but it just seemed stupid. But when I read it to him, my fourth step is sterile. There's nothing on there that I couldn't share with you. I stole from my family. I lied. Nothing. I've heard a lot of fifth steps, and mine is nothing like them. They say you're supposed to share something when somebody shares something. I got nothing. I got nothing. Okay, I stole from my family. And literally, and I don't mean figuratively, I mean literally, someone took a Volkswagen off my shoulders when I read him that fourth step and my fifth step. And that night I got called on at a meeting, and they said, they called on me, and I said, I'm amazed, and I'm not even halfway through. And I didn't know what I was talking about at the time, but it was true. How am I doing on time? Good. Still? Okay, good. Guy called me names at the recovery home, right to my face, like just names, right to my face, and Mike H., and he didn't know I'm from New York. If he'd known that, he wouldn't have called me names. And so I grabbed him by his lapel, and I dragged him to the park down to the end of the road. And by the time we got to the park, he changed his mind, and he was really nice. And they were supposed to throw me out of that recovery home because violence or threats of violence in the state of California in that recovery home are grounds for termination immediately. And so I had my homeless bag, I had my toilet paper and my razors in case I have another razor debacle, and I had a little bag, I had my black, I like to have a black big hoodie so no one can see my face when I'm homeless, and I had $7 in my pocket, and I was gonna buy 2 40 ounces of Steel Reserve and go get on the trolley. I have a lifetime trolley pass. Most people have 6 months, I had lifetime. Mine was blue, yours is red. And it was lifetime. Takes a lot of craziness to get a lifetime bus pass, trust me. And I was out in front of that recovery home knowing I was going to get thrown out, and they didn't throw me out. And that night I got to my bed. I was about 4 or 5 months sober, and I got to my bed in the trailer park of that recovery home, and I got on my knees, and I prayed, and I cried. And I said, God, because I knew that right that moment I should be just coming down from those 240 ounces of Steel Reserve, almost broke, with nowhere to go and nowhere to sleep. I knew it. I knew that's where I was supposed to be right then. And I prayed and I cried and I made God a promise. I said, God, if you never send me back to those streets, I'll serve you through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for the rest of my life. And I meant it. And it's 10 years later. But I still didn't, I'm sober, but I still didn't get too well too fast. I joined a church up the street. They say it's a black church, but it's beige. I don't know where they get that from. And I still don't understand. And I was in the office, and a girl carried a package past, and she carried a bunch of packages back, and she kept going and going. And finally, I'm taught there to volunteer, and so I asked her if I could help, and she put me to work for about 2 hours, and I was livid. I was new. I was, you know what I mean? I was livid. And And then she said, can you come back tomorrow? I said, why would I want to come back tomorrow to carry stuff for you? And she said, it pays $15 an hour under the table. You can work as many hours as you want. And so I got my first paycheck was $1,138. And I called my sponsor and I said, well, I'm going to go drink now. Thank you. I'm good. And I expected him to say, wait right there, I'll come get you, go to a meeting. You know what he said? He said, good. That's what alcoholics do. Shocked me. And so I didn't go drink, but what I did do is I stopped going to meetings. I stopped sponsoring guys. I stopped being of service. I stopped going down to that detox, 1111 Island Avenue and sweeping floors. I stopped doing all that stuff, and I paid my rent for a year, and I had nothing to do but live off the money I made from that little gig. And I worked for about 3 months there. And long about January, my birthday's in August when I called him. And so long about January, I was flat broke and had no money and nowhere to go. And no one was hiring me. No one was touching me. I kept screwing up interviews, you know, mentioning God. He never mentioned God in an interview. I learned there. And I couldn't get a job, and my sober living was about to run out. And instead of looking for a job full-time, I started going to AA full-time. Again, I started sponsoring guys and volunteering at that detox. And what I learned from that experience was that as long as I put AA first, that everything else is going to just work out. And I put AA first, and I got a job. And I got a job at McDonald's. My first job was at McDonald's, sober, about a year. And they put me in the dining room mopping floors. It was really embarrassing. My sponsor said if I didn't love it there, I'd never love it anywhere else. So I was getting tips out there. And then riding my little 10-speed up there and back, and my sister called and asked me to manage her business. And a little over a year sober, I went up to Placerville up by Sacramento, and I would stand up in meetings, because up there you stand up when you talk, and I would say, I am the poster boy for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober 16 months. I am the manager of a business. I have my own phone, my own car, my own place, and if you want what I have, see me after the meeting. I did, I swear to God. And 9 a.m. I went to the 7 a.m. I went to that meeting and said that. 9 a.m. she fired me, took the phone, the place, the job. My sister, I love her, but I was crazy, and so I wasn't really the poster boy of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'm driving back and going through the mountains, San Bernardino Mountains, and I'm driving this old car with a couple hundred thousand miles on it, a newcomer beater car, and I remember thinking, whoever's car is making that smell is in really big trouble. Literally the thought in my head. And as the motor quit, I just went off the off-ramp, gave it to the gardener right there. He drove me to the bus stop. And that night I was in San Diego with a king-size pillowcase with all my worldly possessions in it. Boy, did I learn a lesson about life there. 3.5 years sober, I got my children back. I got all my children back under my roof. My son's idea of fixing trouble was to break the TV. And he's 6'3", big boy. And I got him all back under my roof. And my son would go with me. He'd love to go with me sponsoring guys. He'd love to sit there and listen to me take people through the steps. He loved it. He still loves it. And I tell you the story because it gives me goosebumps. But a couple of Thanksgivings ago, one of his friends offered me a drink. And he said to his friend, he said, my dad doesn't drink. He saves people's lives. And I don't save people's lives. I save my own. But as far as he's concerned, that place that fired me when I had the big house, they hired me back when I was 5 years sober. And the morning before I started that job, I read in the big book, our feet are placed on a path that really goes somewhere. And I cried. First day I started that job, they hired me back. They fired me again, but hey, they hired me back. Look, doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can, and I got a job traveling around the country doing what I do, which was at the time selling furniture. And I traveled all over Florida and Pennsylvania, and I got really lonely, but I got to carry the message. There are a lot of people out there that don't even know there's a big book. I don't know how they do it, but they don't know. I learned some valuable lessons. How am I doing on time? What do we got here? Yes! Good. The last thing I want to say is that I never knew I could have this life. I never knew it. I'm a pants-pissing drunk. I use my underwear for toilet paper. I don't know about you, but that's how I drink. And today my life is, when I went into the bar, I would be a maintenance man. But as I drank, I would become the COO of the company and leave, you know what I mean? I would leave I would leave something more than I really was. And today I have a life that is literally a drunken bar story. It really is. If I told you the position that I have for the company that I work for, you would think I was telling, I'm sitting across from you on a bar stool telling you a story. If I told you the relationship, the only dysfunction in my life is here. I have no, it's not my family. We get along perfectly. We talk about things. They're normal people. And so I don't have the luxury of being a crazy alcoholic anymore. I go to meetings and I write inventories and I pray and I meditate and I catch every newcomer. If you're here and you're new, after hearing my story, you still want my help, I'm still happy to help you. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams, and it's nothing that I planned. The business that I'm in, I didn't plan it. The ideas are all from my sponsor. I just can't believe that I get to stand here and get to share my story with you, and it's my story. I want you to know that if you're in your first 5 years and you're having a really good time, we have nothing in common. And I want you to know that because I come up here and be funny and stuff doesn't mean I didn't have a really hard time for the first 5 years. And if you're here struggling, they told me that if this was easy, we'd have meetings in stadiums. It's really hard. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. Thank you for sharing my story with me. All right.